Italy emerged from the Second World War in ruins, divided, invaded, and economically broken. It was a nation that some claimed had ceased to exist. By the 1960s, however, Italy could boast the fastest growing economy in the world as rural society disappeared almost overnight. In The Archipelago, acclaimed historian John Foote chronicles Italy's tumultuous history from the post-war present to a post-war period to the present. Delighted to be joining me live on the line, John Foote himself. John, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. Italy's transformation has been quite something. Explain to us then the situation that the country found itself in 1945.
Well, there'd been a world war actually fought on Italian soil. It had been heavily bombed. It had divided into a kind of civil war between Italians fighting on one side or the other, anti-fascists and fascists. So it was in a terrible state, kind of lost control of its own sovereignty, its own power, and it was kind of ruins all over the country. So it was kind of, you know, back to the year zero in 1945, and there was, people were more or less starving in the streets in many places.
I mean, Italy itself hadn't really been a united nation for that long itself before the outbreak of hostilities in the Second World War.
Yeah, I mean, it was only formed in the 1860s and 1870s, so it was a very young country. And as you said in the introduction, some people claim that, you know, Italy kind of died in the Second World War. It didn't have any power over itself. The Americans and the Germans were in control of various parts of the country. So it was a very young country and searching for an identity, which it needs to kind of rebuild everything after 1945.
And how did they go about that rebuilding, restructuring process, starting off presumably with, I mean, we know that obviously Germany and Japan were helped by the victorious Allies. How were the Italians aided?
Yeah, Italians got a lot of money from Marshall Plan, which was basically US money. And then the US was very worried that Italy would go over to communism after the war. They had a very big communist party, so they pumped money in. And that's where most of the help came, also beginning of the European project. So a lot of it came from there. And the Italians themselves, you know, rolled up their sleeves, literally rebuilt many of their cities. And quite quickly, 10, 15 years later, it was going through an enormous, what's called the economic miracle, very quickly going towards very quick developments and catching up with the other countries in the world.
And Italy was also, I mean, it was a country, they were a nation, a new nation, that embraced modernity, that embraced in change and embraced a new style, a sort of optimistic post-war period.
That's right, yeah. I mean, Italy was, in the 50s and 60s, already became a world leader in things like design, in car manufacture, Fiat, you know, made these extraordinary cheap cars that everybody bought, which were also beautifully designed. So by the 50s and 60s, people were ready to embrace consumerism, and millions of people moved from the countries to the cities, and Italy became an industrial society for the first time, with big factories producing these goods, which were then bought by the people. So it was an extraordinary, you know, 7% growth a year in the late 50s and early 60s, and that miracle pulled people up from poverty into, you know, having a certain amount of income at that point.
Do you think that the Italian economic miracle took place because you had, like, an Agnelli at Fiat at the helm directing things? You had, I don't know, the other Italian industrialists coming out of Turin and Milano who were basically setting policy despite what the politicians were up to, because obviously Italian politics, as we're even seeing today, is notoriously volatile.
Yes, I mean, there was an amazing group of industrialists who were ready to embrace design ideas, fashion ideas. You know, Italy became a world leader in those areas already in the 60s and 70s. And they were very, very dynamic. And, you know, the Agnellis built cars not just in Italy. They built them in Russia and all over the world. And, yes, that's kind of despite what's going on in the political system, which is pretty conservative, pretty corrupt, clientelistic at that point. So you've got a kind of the dynamic industrial sector, and then you've got a very kind of staid, one-party state almost in the political sector.
And also, this whole thing with rural society disappearing overnight, somewhat like, you know, we are Spain's largest English language broadcaster, so we have seen a translation from a rural society that has been going on basically since before the Renaissance into a modern industrialized society. The same thing happened in Italy, but in Italy, because it had didn't have a dictatorship, there was also a huge social change in Italy.
Yes, that's right. I think the parallels with Spain are very strong. Very quickly, you know, jobs that have been around for thousands of years kind of disappeared, and the villages emptied. Like sharecroppers, who were people who kind of lived, gave half their crop to the landowner, they just disappeared. They've been around for thousands of years. They left the villages and the kind of they depopulated large parts of the countryside. And all those traditions, those rural traditions, were kind of overnight almost died out. And it was very tumultuous. I don't think people really realized at the time what was happening. We're only starting to realize it now. So very quickly, the cities filled up, and somewhere like Turin doubled in size in the 1960s.
And what did that do to the social movement in Italy then? I mean, because obviously you had the women started to take a more, perhaps a more active role in day-to-day life?
Yes, you've got a big social movement. So you've got the anniversary of 1968 this year, and there's a lot of talk about that. When people came to the city, they started to demand modernization, more modern laws, which were very outdated, and some of them still fascist in Italy, and women started to enter the workforce. And you have, firstly, a very powerful social movement to modernize institutions like psychiatric hospitals and schools, which were still run in very conservative ways, but also then women started to speak up, and you have reforms on divorce, on abortion, on family law, which really bring Italy legally into European mainstream.
And also there was a tremendous flowering of the arts and culture. You know, Italian cinema took off. We had the Italian art taking off. And, of course, that whole idea of Dolce Vita.
Yes, that's a film from Federico Fellini from 1960. It's actually very critical of what was going on. But the kind of glamour of it is what comes across, I think, to many people. But actually, if you watch the film, it's quite a bitter portrait of your sort of loss of values and so on. But that idea of Rome as the center of the Dolce Vita, the glamour, the paparazzi, which were invented in that film, that word comes from that film, was very strong. And Italian cinema kind of at that period is one of the most important in the world. And everybody is kind of copying it and wants to be Fellini or Visconti or Rossellini at that time.
Also, in the book that you put out, The Archipelago, you speak about the silent assimilation into mainstream politics of the former Italian fascists. And we had the kind of that sort of thing in Spain as well with the Pact of Forgetting.
Yes, I think that, again, there are parallels there. Many people kind of move seamlessly from the regime into the post-war period and nothing seemed to happen to them. I tell the story of a judge who had been on something called the Tribunal of the Race, which was about the anti-Semitic laws in Italy under fascism, which divided up Jews and non-Jews. And he had been very much part of the implementation of that. And he, in the post-war period, nothing seemed to happen to him. He became actually president of the Constitutional Court, which is the most important judge in Italy. So lots of these people, there was a kind of desire not to talk about fascism. And I think in Spain, very similar. And kind of just people kind of seamlessly carried on and became very powerful and just forgot what they've done in the past.
Also, it would be very easy to sort of to just sit down and do a dry history of Italy since 1945, about the political intrigue, about the role that various industrialists had had, you know, about the rise of the left, the paranoia of the right, whatever you wanted to say. But you've also in your book have brought in some of that cultural flavour as well through songs, through cinema, and also, and we're talking Italy, of course, through the football.
Yeah, I think that's very important too. I think in a lot of histories, they don't talk about things like sport and music. And actually, to talk about Italy without talking about sport is a bit absurd. I mean, that's one of the 26 million Italians declare themselves to be football fans. That's one in two. And the rest probably still watch it. It's a hugely important part of cultural life. When Italy won the World Cup in 1982, that's the most watched program in Italian history. 95% of Italians were in front of the TV that day in 1982. And that was probably one of the moments of national unification which is strongest, much more than a political moment or another kind of cultural moment. You know, everybody was watching the same game and then went out and celebrated in the streets. And so I think you really need to talk about those areas as well, and they're also great fun to talk about.
And I mean, talking about, you touched on something there, because you say that was 95% of Italians watching the 82 World Cup final. Again, it goes back to that point of Italy being a new modern country, and even now we talk about the two Italies, you know, the industrialised north and perhaps the more sleepy southern cantons or countries of Italy.
Yeah, I think that's not necessarily true anymore, that the south is still poorer overall, but there's been a huge development in the south. I mean, 50 years ago, if you went to places like Sicily, you know, the poverty was pretty striking, but if you go to places like that now, it's certainly not the case anymore. It's still politically divided. In the last election, the voting was very different between south and north, but that, you know, the southern question is not really there in the same way that it was. You know, the country is still divided over many things, but not so much in that way anymore, I think.
And so why did you think the time was right to write your book, The Archipelago, Italy Since 1945?
I think it's a very important moment in Italian history. We've just had two parties come to power who were both populists, who weren't around in the post-war period, and you kind of got the end of the post-war settlement. The post-war was run by these big Basque parties, the Christian Democrats, the Socialists, the Communists. They all disappeared in a massive corruption scandal in the 90s. Then Silvio Berlusconi came along and governed really for 10, 15 years. And now you've got the end of that. You've got this very interesting, quite scary moment in many ways of these two completely, well, one's been around a bit longer, but one completely new movement has just taken power, the Five Star Movement. And nobody knows what's going to happen. And the man who's just become Prime Minister, nobody knew who he was until about 10 minutes ago. We've all been Googling him. So it's a very extraordinary moment. And I'm kind of lucky, I suppose, my books came out at this right at this time.
I mean, you're a professor of modern Italian history in the Department of Italian at the University of Bristol. You spent 20 years in Milano in the 80s and 90s. Where do you think Italy goes? And can it look back to its past since 1945 and perhaps draw some pointers, draw some lessons for the future?
It could, but it's really a very new set of people who've taken power. So many of them weren't even in politics 5 or 10 years ago. So they've kind of thrown out the baby and the bathwater at this point. And, you know, I think one of the big issues that Italy's going to have to deal with, Italy's always been at the centre of the European project. You know, the Treaty of Rome was not by chance signed in Rome. It's always been at the heart of that, you know, the idea that countries should come together to prevent future wars. But very much that's fading amongst Italians, that idea of being part of Europe. And I think that's the kind of crossroads. And, you know, it needs to look back and see where its history comes from. The founders of the European project, many of them were Italian in the post-war period. And so it's a moment of crisis, a very interesting moment. But where it's going to go, I don't know. I did live in Italy a long time, and I have a kind of love-hate relationship with it. It's a difficult country, but also an amazing country. And I don't know. I don't think anybody knows what's going to happen, even in the next few weeks, let alone in the next few years.
The book is called The Archipelago, Italy Since 1945. It's out now on Bloomsbury. It's by John Foote. John, if people want to find out more about you or the book, is there a website? Can they do the social media thing? How can they get in touch with you?
I'm on Twitter, at FootyMac, FootyMac. And they can find me through the University of Bristol website and write to me and find out about my other books and so on.
John Foote, it's been great to speak to you. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much.